the Gospel of Mark. Jesus and his disciples left from there and began a journey through Galilee, but he did not wish anyone to know about it. He was teaching his disciples and telling them, "The Son of Man is to be handed over to men, and they will kill him 3 days. After his death, the Son of Man will rise." But they did not understand the saying, and they were afraid to question him. They came to Capernaum, and once inside the house, he began to ask them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they remained silent. They had been discussing among themselves on the way who was the greatest. Then he sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "If anyone wishes to be first, he should be the last of all and the servant of all." Taking a child, he placed it in their midst, and putting his arms around it, he said to them, "Whoever receives one child such as this in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but the one who sent me." And so the Gospel for the Sunday. The Gospel presents us with a wonderful slice of human experience. Jesus, the teacher, is attempting to lead his disciples into a whole new level of understanding. The Son of Man is to be handed over to men, and they will kill him, and 3 days after his death, the Son of Man will rise. Jesus could have done it all by himself, but he's entrusting his ministry of salvation to the very ordinary human beings he has chosen, very much like ourselves. These men are not without merit. After all, they've left all things to follow him, some from backgrounds with very little prospect, but others had left boats and nets and families. Why, even a tax collector was among his disciples. Jesus places his message at the disposal of these very ordinary human beings, perhaps to teach us even today that the richest experiences of life and even the very triumph of life in glory makes its way among the ordinary, reaches out to the most simple, is found in the give and take of everyday society. And just as Jesus travels apart with the disciples to impart to them a very elevated teaching, they more than fail the test. Some say that the house mentioned in today's reading was one owned by Jesus and served as a kind of base of operations for the region around Capernaum. Burdened as I am, as a pastor with cares for always, it seems, run-down church properties, it's a comfort to know that Jesus might have also shared such responsibilities. Now comes the moment of testing. Once inside the house, Jesus asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" Silence. In a hierarchical society, it would only be natural to be aware of who is the greatest and to talk about it. Will our culture ever be the same since the heavyweight champion of the world, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, declared to us in no uncertain terms that he is the greatest? The biblical echo of his boasting humor provides a sort of healing and refreshment to all of us who cherish such absurd self-preference, but in the silence of our hearts. This desire for excellence takes many forms. We're sickened and disappointed when such foolish boasting enters our political discourse. But it's even worse when it enters religion. In church groups, more often than I would like, you may find people who would never boast. Butter wouldn't melt in their mouths, my mother would say. These people fashion their claim to excellence not by achievement and self-expression, but by hiding behind the safety of authority. For them, obedience, and sometimes even blind obedience, is the pathway to success and dominance over other people. Let's see if this example will help. In past years, when I was responsible for training seminarians, I would occasionally be surprised by a brother who had just been ordained a deacon. His role would be to read the gospel at Mass. And of course, at that point, they love to dress up, but it's understandable. I've seen judges do the same thing. But instead of reading the gospel to the best of one's ability, this deacon would fold his hands as if to add a certain holiness to what he was doing. And when I asked him why he was doing that, he would answer, "I'm praying." And I would say, "No, you're not. You're reading the gospel to me, and you're not doing a very good job of it. You need to become real." In the gospel, Jesus sets a child before us to break us away from false piety. Real humility has to do with the truth of our own self-worth. Given the needs of our world, the work of religion summons us to be more than people who derive their self-worth and direction in life from a slavish following of authoritarian religion, or for that matter, a mindless secularism that seems so popular these days. Jesus is just brilliant in his challenge to the apostles and to us. What happens when a real-life child is placed before us? A child has needs, above all food, comfort, safety, attention, love. Even people who are conflicted in their ideologies, sense, and sense of self can be called forth into a fuller humility and humanity by the needs and delightful unpredictability of a child. Most wonderful of all, a child surprises us. Jesus is leading his disciples from popular common sense concerns into the deepest mystery of the meaning of our life on earth and the way of salvation. To embrace this mystery, the disciples are led from being passive, submissive followers into men and women whose lives are filled with the excitement of redemption. And this mystery is taking place within them. Unlike my pious deacon, Jesus would not have us be some religious flunky meticulously performing our tasks, but men and women alive with the spirit and word of the gospel, as these are being realized in our own experience. As Jesus begins really teaching his beloved friends, he would have them fully experience the promise and glory of his own life in the Father. We would have to say they did pretty well in the long run. We would choose no less a following of Jesus for ourselves and for our time. This is the true adventure of our salvation. And you are certainly, in your own humble way, the greatest expression of this mystery.